south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I get emails all the time from people asking me about Brazil. Huge country, lots of opportunities, right? Well, let me give you another couple of reasons why I'd never want to live or move there. Nice place to visit for short periods of time, but man, the police is out of control. Listen to this. You know, they've got a president there named Lula. He was president before and then went to jail for some years. As usual, right? And came back and got elected president again. It happens so much in Latin America. I don't think that's ever happened in the States. Sure, they're all crooks up there in the States too, but they generally don't go to jail. They just go on a lecture tour and write senseless and inane books and make millions. Have you heard of a guy named Ovamit? So anyway, Lula got reelected in Brazil. The guy's a dyed-in-the-wool socialist. He says that in interviews, so it's not like I'm making it up. Though people these days, or corrupt politicians, don't call themselves socialists. That word's kind of crude. It conjures up 50 or so failed tries at it. So people like Luna and Bernie Sanders don't come right out and say they are socialists, not that one word, because the word socialist has too much baggage. They call themselves democratic socialists, a kinder and gentler type of soft Marxism. Rolls off the tongue better than just plain old socialist. Anyway, in Brazil, Lula, President Lula, true to his socialist principles and the need to expand the role of the state in a society that's already weighed down by some of the most bureaucratic, lard-ass, deadbeat government worker craziness found in any country in the world. Well, guess what? Lula just signed a massive growth acceleration finance program. Inspired, he says, by the massive stimulus package of U.S. President Joe Biden that promotes renewable energy and reindustrialization. Yeah, right, like government spending has promoted anything other than unprecedented waste, corruption, and cronyism. Yeah, right, let's use Joe Biden as an example to follow. Why not Mussolini? After all, he did make the trains run on time. Anyway, the sweaty masses have no memory, so they do buy that election time claptrap, the promise of massive freebies and all that. So he did get elected again. You know what they say, you get the government you deserve because you voted for him. In a way, though, Lula has kept part of his promises. That's unusual, huh? Since he took office, he's created 14 new government bureaucracies and ministries, fulfilling a third of his promise to create 37 new bureaucracies. What a guy, huh? What a job creator. Yeah, that's right. He's promised to create 37 new government bureaucracies in total. And in the mind of the average mental midget, that means more jobs because, hell, 37 new bureaucracies, you have to fill those positions, right? That means new buildings to house them, new office furniture, new copy machines and computers to shuffle the new useless paperwork. Job creation. Wow, don't we all want that? Only one little flaw in the argument. Where's the money going to come from? Well, they'll just have to tax more or print more, which means everyone else's standard of living will go down. It has to. That's one law of economics you can't violate. So anyway, along with everything else that's wrong with Brazil, the high taxes, their immense bureaucracy, the fact that now Brazilians working on the books have to report their worldwide income like U.S. citizens and get taxed on it, etc., etc. The point is, unless you have a nice nest egg tucked away already that you're going to bring down with you if you want to live in Brazil, you're not going to be very happy with the way the place is run. By the way, the crime down there, especially in the big cities, is out of control. Did you know Brazil is one of the only countries in the world where they've caught on film the locals robbing Mormons? Seems everywhere else in the world, a Mormon is sort of untouchable, except in Brazil. Oh, and speaking of interesting videos coming out of Brazil, did you see the video of the guy that went into a drugstore, robbed it, ran out into the parking lot with his stolen treasure? When he made it to the street, a car stopped, a guy got out, pulled a gun on him, and robbed the guy who just robbed the pharmacy. Have you seen that video? It's one for the books. It almost looks like it was set up, but it wasn't. Yep, that's the kind of stuff that goes down when you live in a big city in Brazil. Oh, and have you been to Rio de Janeiro? Yeah, Ipanema Beach. one of the most beloved and romantic beaches in the world, right? Well, I've been there. I stayed at a very nice hotel right on Ipanema Beach, and there are signs right outside the doors and the gates leading to the beach from your hotel, advising you not to go walk on the beach. Because, you see, all the beaches in Brazil, and in most of Latin America for that matter, are public. So even if you have a nice, expensive $300 a night hotel room right on the beach ain't theirs. Or ain't theirs to block off anyway. Or cordon off for private use. That means once you walk past your hotel pool, you're on public property, man. And as a tourist staying in an expensive hotel, you are a target. Then again, you might have a really nice experience if you go down. There's no telling. It's a flip of the coin. You could have good or bad luck. Only most tourists I've talked to have had some bad experiences. On top of that, everyone I know who lives down there has been robbed. Not once, but many times. In fact, one girl I talked to down there who works at a nice hotel, a cashier, she had her cell phone stolen 3 times. And she's a local who knows better. Not a tourist with rose-colored glasses. With a fascination for Bossa Nova and the hots for the girl from Ipanema. Oh, and by the way, that famous vocalist lady who sang the girl from Ipanema, Astrid Gilberto, she just died last month, age 83. So it's been a long time since she's been tall, slender, young, and lovely, like the words to the song suggest. You know, when I first came down to Brazil, I thought it would be Bossa Nova blasting from every restaurant, disco, and boombox. No, it was just mind-numbing U.S. hip-hop, rap, and Latin American reggaeton. It was so disappointing sonically, really. The only time I ever heard good, melodic, classic bossa nova, the famous stuff Americans associate with Brazilian culture, was while sitting in expensive restaurants or high-end hotel bars, where the management's kind of forced into playing that nostalgic stuff because they know the tourists expect it. But out on the street and anywhere the average public and the sweaty masses hang out, all rap and reggaeton shit. You know what I'm talking about. Of course, the same thing goes if you take a trip to the Caribbean or Central America, Mexico, or anywhere else in South America. You're not going to hear traditional Mexican, Latin American, or Caribbean music unless it's a setup at a tourist hotspot. Or unless you happen to be at a get-together where most of the Latinos there are old and retired. You won't hear those salsa, rumba, or romantic, classic Latino ballads on the street or in the bars, restaurants, and discos. You're going to hear self-mutilating, gold-tooth rappers with a 50 IQ singing about money, cars, hoes, and bling, just like you hear up in the States, along with reggaeton morons with half the IQ of those rapper idiots, spit-gurgling their 10 or 12 words in Spanish, spewing their infantile versions of the same crap. In other words, if you're old school and think when you go down to Mexico, the Caribbean, or South America, you're going to hear Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass blasting out every storefront, man, you're living in a different century. Better ask Mr. Peabody to adjust the Wayback Machine. Oh, and speaking of reggaeton, just the other day I was talking to a hip young Latina. I asked her about the very first time she heard that song, Gasolina. That's considered the very first reggaeton song. I remember where I was. I was in Roatan, Honduras in 2004. I remember it well. It's like remembering the first time you had explosive diarrhea in someone else's bathroom. Anyway, there I was in Roatan, Honduras, 2004. And all of a sudden that Gasolina, that gasoline song by Daddy Yankee was playing everywhere. And you know, me being a B-grade musician, I thought, that's interesting. Infantile, but interesting. I mean, it had like 4 whole words in the song. Deme más gasolina. That means give me more gasoline in English. That was it. The entirety of the lyrics of that song. Just 4 words, like the vocabulary of someone with brain damage, repeated over and over again. With no beginning, no chorus, no refrain. It wasn't set up like a regular song. It was like a children's infantile rhyme that just kept going on and on. Give me more gasoline. It was playing everywhere, and people were dancing like crazy to it. And I thought, oh well, it'll pass. Just another novelty song like La Macarena, or Valley Girl, or The Monster Mash. They come and go, and hopefully go in a hurry, right? Although The Macarena is an actual song, a cool kind of song, too, in its own way. Has a beginning, a middle, a chorus, and an end, just like The Monster Mash, even Valley Girl. So I thought this reggaeton gasoline song would have its day and be gone. Like Good News Week, L.U.P., or Timey Kangaroo Down. Man, was I wrong. Reggaeton, as they soon started calling it. It became the Latin American version of rap, dumbed down rap, if that's even possible. So, when you come down to Latin America, be prepared to get your ears tweaked almost constantly by that shit. Though, I have to admit, it used to bother me a lot more than it does now. Somehow, I've been able to sort of block it out, you know, like when a baby cries or a dog barks. But I digress as usual. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about Brazil. Like I said, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Enough said about that. Hey, remember a couple weeks ago we were talking about Airbnbs as an investment in Latin America? Well, just looking at some news coming out of the United States, it says that ordinances are being passed all over the United States. Specifically, looking at this article, it says there's one in Dallas, Texas, Miami, New York, New Jersey, Atlanta, San Francisco, all of them passing laws and ordinances right now that severely restrict and regulate short-term rentals like Airbnbs. They're either not allowing new Airbnbs at all, or making you register yours with the municipality and pay newly created Airbnb taxes. Nice, huh? And in Miami, for example, if you don't register your Airbnb with the municipality and have it inspected, you're subject to a $20,000 fine. And most investors going into the short term, that is Airbnb market, are thinking, hell, I only got to rent the thing out for 10 days a month to cover my mortgage and maintenance costs. The rest, gravy. So then what happens if they pass laws restricting Airbnb use in your region? In the end, you've only got two plays. Convert your property into a long-term rental or sell it and get the hell out. But then, of course, lots of other investors in the same boat will be trying to get the hell out at the same time. So then, how many buyers do you think are going to want to get in on that? Prices are sure to drop. And of course, whatever happens in the first world trickles down to Latin America. Sure, there's always lag time, but I'm seeing it already. Just recently, I was invited to a party in a residential tower. And of course, to get into a residential tower, you have to go through the lobby, show an ID to the guard at the front desk, and write your name in the book. Don't you hate that? That's why I always scribble a name that's not close to mine. And I never give out my real passport or ID number either. But that's another story. Anyway, I couldn't help but notice the sign on the wall in the lobby that said, "Attention, propietarios," that means owners. "We are no longer allowing you to rent out your place as an Airbnb, by order of the Junta Directiva." So then who is this Junta Directiva? Well, that's your local elected housing board. You know, homeowners association. They collect the maintenance fees, pay the bills, maintain the common areas, fix what's broken, hire the super tan muscular gay pool guy, etc., etc. I can say that, right? Because these days it's cool to be gay. It's cool to have gay and lesbian kids, too. Just check out every Hollywood movie that's come out in the last couple of years. In the past, throwing a gay guy in the mix used to be a goofy afterthought, right? But these days, Hollywood's kind of gone gay. You've noticed, right? That goes for Marvel and Disney, even Disney theme parks. So then why am I bringing this up when we were talking about real estate and Airbnbs? Well, that's because I happen to have a pretty good friend. Gringo expat, big time real estate investor, has lots of Airbnbs. Guess where? In Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. He told me he absolutely loves renting his Airbnbs to gay couples. He even has a few of his Airbnb ads placed on gay websites. Why? Because he says they really know how to take care of a place and often leave it better off than when they entered, as opposed to straight Americans. Many are just slobs, messy. They come in from the beach, get sand all over the place. But that might be of little or no consequence in the future, as Airbnb restrictions start hitting the Latin American market too, and they are. Just a little advice. You better think twice. And now a word about playing the lottery. Yeah. Have you done it? I think everyone's done it at least once, right? Especially when those jackpots get up to, what is it now, $1 billion? Who'd have thunk, huh? What could you possibly do with $1 billion+? Even Elvis couldn't buy enough Cadillacs for his friends to put a dent in the interest. Now, one of my brothers likes to play the lottery. He won $5,000 or $10,000 here and there, though he admits he lost just as much too. Illinois lottery, that is. Now, you think lotteries are big with the sweaty masses up in the States. Man, down here in Latin America, they're out of control. Not only are there little lottery kiosks every couple of blocks, and of course, they sell lottery tickets in drugstores and mini markets, etc. But there are also little guys on the streets and little guys standing in the entrance to practically every public building and supermarket selling lotto tickets too. It's all quite confusing to me because they've got all kinds of lotteries going on at the same time. It's not just one big so-called state or country lottery. There are many different lotteries going on the same day. Who knows if they're all legit? It's hard to say, but there's got to be lots of hanky-panky going on. After all, this is Latin America. Knowing that, you got to wonder why anyone would play them, but millions do. The different lottery companies have different names, different prices, different payouts. Yet, when you talk to people, no one ever seems to win the big money. They win the usual, you know, 100 bucks, 200 bucks here and there. In the local funny money, of course, but the big jackpot, or jackpots, the ones they always advertise on big billboards in huge letters, don't ever seem to get one. I've yet to meet a Latino or Latina who knows anybody personally who hit it big. Though once in a while you hear people say, I know a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend who hit the big time. But that's just hearsay. You can't really believe it. Though I'd be willing to bet if there is a big jackpot winner, he's probably related to some big cheese in government. Doesn't that figure? Now, I know some lower and middle class Latinos who have a family member who's addicted to the lottery. That's nothing new. I have one or two family members up in the States who have that problem too. In fact, gringos have told me their Latina girlfriends are often addicted to the lottery, but in a small way. In fact, I've been to a couple of gringos' houses, gringos who have Latina girlfriends or wives. I've noticed myself when walking through the kitchen or to the bathroom, a ceramic dish or a countertop scattered with lottery tickets. The same thing has happened to me. I've had girlfriends too who play the lottery, and I try to talk them out of it, because it really is a no-win situation. It seems the person's least able to afford to play the lottery spend sometimes their last dollar playing it. Seems everyone who rides the chicken bus is hoping for that jackpot that never comes. In fact, I once told one Latino girlfriend who insisted on playing the lottery, not a lot, but every day she'd drop a couple of bucks. Used to really get on my nerves too, because I know the odds. Having been an engineer in the past life and taking so many statistics courses, it sure wisens you up about lotteries and games of chance. But logic doesn't work with a country that's in love with the lottery. So anyway, I remember telling one girl, you might as well take your lottery money and set it on fire. It'll be a lot more fun. Well, she wasn't amused. So then what to do? What to do if you've got a Latina girlfriend or a Latino boyfriend who plays the lottery religiously? Even after you've gone through all the logical explanations. Sometimes they'll agree and swear off. They nod, they smile, they say they get it. And then one day she's got her big old purse open on the counter. You walk by and you see a bunch of lottery tickets in there. What are you supposed to do? Oh, and get this. One of my gringo buddies told me his Latina girlfriend had a hot tip on a lottery winner. Well, how do you get that? Who gives out hot tips on a lottery when it's supposed to be legit, state-run or otherwise? Anyway, after that lottery was drawn and she lost, she fessed up to him that she went to a loan shark and took a loan for 500 bucks to play those numbers on the lottery. And now that loan shark was knocking on the door. Man, I'll tell you, my gringo buddy was furious. He ponied up the dough, but that relationship did not last but a few more months. Now, as for me, I've had a few girlfriends who've played the lottery. And if it's only just a buck here and a buck there, I don't make a big deal out of it. Let her have her fun. I tell her it's a waste. I tell her it's money down the toilet. That statistics show you got a better chance of being bitten by a shark or hit by lightning. I'll say it just once, I won't harp on it, because I know it's just futile. I realize now it's a cultural thing. If someone's middle class or lower middle class here in Latin America, which is pretty much way below the poverty line in the US. So, a big lottery win here would completely change a person's lifestyle. That's why in Latin America, playing the lottery is universal. It's one of the only ways to have hope if you're in a dead-end job, and there are just tons and tons of people working dead-end jobs. Sure, they may be happy working those dead-end jobs, but the realization of being stuck in a grind is always there. So anyway, that's one of the small annoyances I've noticed when you hook up with a Latina, or girls, gringas, hook up with a Latin guy. They will have some bad or annoying habits that you'll have to get used to, because they're not going to change. You're not going to change either, are you? I know. When someone calls you out on something they don't like about you, you'll say, yeah, I'll change. Or you might say that. But most of the time, it won't happen. In fact, that's one of the big errors in the mating and dating game in general. I hear it all the time from women, especially Latina women. They'll say, yeah, I married this guy or had a kid with this guy. He was a great guy. Treated me nice. Cleaned up well. But he had this little drinking problem. But only on weekends. and he liked to spend more than he had, like putting on the dog. I figured in time those two things were changeable. Yeah, right, that's the oldest one in the book. He or she will change for love. He or she have got some defects, and in time you'll be able to change them. Well, good luck with that. It almost never happens. You've got about as much chance of changing an adult's habits as you do winning the lottery. So there is a small, infinitesimal chance, but don't count on it. Now, speaking of the difficulty you have with adults and their capacity to change, that's really the biggest obstacle for people who want to have a plan B, but just never go ahead and do it. Never pull the trigger. Because it does involve change, a drastic kind of change. Getting out of Dodge means leaving things you were comfortable with, even if they didn't quite agree with you and were getting on your nerves. What's the old saying? It's better the devil you know? My question is, though, is it better that you tiptoe through life nice and boring and uneventful so you can arrive at death safely? If that's your plan, stay up in the States or Canada or Europe. Have a nice funeral and a nice send-off party up there. You're probably not the type who likes to explore, likes new things, and likes adventure. After all, you've got all the sports channels you need. You've got Netflix. Stay up in Cleveland. We don't need you down here in Latin America. You probably won't fit in. All right, moving on. You know, cocaine, yeah, cocaine, has been sort of the scourge of the first world for the last, what, 50 years? Well, it's been longer than that, ever since a guy named John Pemberton, in 1886, put it into a new kind of drink he called Coca-Cola. Now, I don't think too many first world people, that is, have visited Colombia, Peru, or Ecuador, where cocaine, or at least the coca leaves, are legal. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because when you go down there and you talk about the evils of cocaine, people get awful pissed off. I'm talking about the Colombians, the Peruvians, the Ecuadorians. They just can't understand why Americans especially confuse cocaine, the powder, with the organic green coca leaves, which grow everywhere. Now, the locals down in South America don't have much use for that Peruvian marching powder. What they have use for, dozens if not hundreds of uses for, is the coca leaf, the organic green leaf base, the unprocessed coca leaves, which, by the way, give you a nice buzz if you chew on them. In fact, some hotels have little dishes full of that stuff in their lobbies. Now, in defense of cocaine, or I should say the coca leaf, lots of articles have been written by very educated South Americans trying to set the record straight about the coca leaf, pointing out it is an essential ingredient in South American culture. In fact, in some cities, departments, and countries, the little green coca leaf is considered sacred, and no law will ever be passed against its use. So, right now, I'm perusing one of those articles in defense of the coca leaf. So I'll condense it a bit. You'll find it quite interesting. It says, for one thing, the people who lived in the Andes Mountains believed that no important activity could prosper if it was not accompanied by the coca leaf, that little leaf. It's what allowed the people to work the crops. It was the food that provided energy and vitality to carry out the hard work, a remedy for altitude sickness, stomach problems, and a symbol of gratitude and a central food in the diet and agriculture of people who lived on or near the Andes Mountains. However, it says most first world countries see the coca leaf as the raw material for one of the most problematic export products in contemporary history. It adds, throughout South America, luckily the coca leaf is present in gastronomy. In restaurants, they use it for many preparations such as coca butter, coca bread, coca cocktails, infusions of coca and ice cream, all completely legal. Scientists have even analyzed the nutritional properties of coca. It contains calcium, potassium, magnesium, iron, sodium, vitamins C, E, B1, and B2. In fact, in Colombia, there's a company called Coca Nesta. It's a giant industrial company that utilizes coca leaves in the making of soft drinks, beer, tea, cookies, oils, rum, and coca liqueur. This huge Colombian company has a whole line of coca food and cosmetic products, including Coca Beca wine and Coca Sica hydrating drink, all completely legal. Another industrial coca company called Del Condor makes a powder tea of toasted coca leaves. They make ginger and coca leaf flour for baking and tea. And of course, almost every worker at high levels, over 6,000 to 8,000 feet above sea level, use coca leaves to treat altitude sickness. In fact, for naturalistic doctors, it's the first line of treatment. An infusion of coca leaf extract is very effective. And in the gastronomy department, coca leaves used in desserts, like goat cheese and coca powder sponge cake. Sounds pretty nasty. Don't think I'll try that anytime soon. How about you? There's also a very popular chocolate drink that's infused with coca leaf. And in some bars and restaurants in South America, that coca leaf is infused into a drink called ciervo drink. It's prepared with Prosecco and Tanqueray gin. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, one thing they didn't mention in this article is that those coca leaves help people lose weight. At least I know a few gringos. One specifically in Bolivia said he lost 40 pounds by chewing on those coca leaves daily. Not a lot, he said, just a pinch or two like you would chewing tobacco, two or three times a day. And he was able to lose 40 pounds. He said he'd been fighting his weight problem for years with zero success in the States. And then he went to Bolivia on a one-year contract with an IT firm to set up repeater towers for high-speed internet. And within a half a year, he said he lost 40 pounds and his chronic back problems went away. He said hauling around all that extra weight and being at 6,000 to 8,000 feet above sea level, he said within 2 hours he had to sit down with almost no energy for the rest of the day. So then some of the engineering nerds he worked with said you have to try these little coca leaves. They said just chewing on a pinch once or twice a day would put the bounce back in your step. And man, they were certainly right about that. Then he said he went back to the States after his year contract was up. Regained about 30 pounds and the back problem too. So then what's a guy like that supposed to do? Nope, and it's not what you're thinking. He didn't go out looking for a cocaine dealer in the streets of Philly, where he came from. But he did so wish they would renew the contract he had in Bolivia, but the job's done. Guess what? He's put together a plan B. He says within 3 years he'll be back down in South America. And not just for that coca and what it did for his health, but because he really enjoyed the laid-back lifestyle. And figures living down there, he'll live a lot longer and a lot happier, too. Which begs the question, how's your plan B coming? When are you getting the hell out of Dodge?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.